Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ross Marquand.
This is Cooper Andrews.
Hi, my name is Coleman Domingo.
Hey, I'm David Morrissey.
Hey there, I'm Greg Nicotero, and you are listening to
the Cynic Radio Podcast. Now, your hosts, Igri and Cynic.
That's right, folks. We are here and back again live, and I want to thank you all for joining us on this fantastic June 25th evening for what I've deemed the incredible show. On this week's show, well, we get the honor and pleasure of sitting down with professional wrestler Shawna Reed, and we learn about her career and what drove her to follow her dreams and become a professional wrestler. And then, if that's not enough, Ryan George is back with us. He's done globetrotting and gallivanting his way across the UK, and he's in the saddle for us to break down a pretty good Incredibles 2 movie from Disney. All that and more, and it starts now. Hey, Ig. So how you feeling about this live show?
You know what? I think it's a really good time, and I hope that people are out there listening and thinking about calling in, and you can call in. You can ask us questions, 657-383-0347. We're here, and we're here to talk to you. We're going to have a good time this week. I mean, I can't wait to talk to this wrestler. The Incredibles was a fun movie. We've got some news to talk about. There's a lot of things going on. And I think, you know, if you're listening, hopefully you have some fun tonight.
And more importantly, Ryan George should be joining us at some point in the program, which I'm extremely excited about.
Yeah, I had sent out an APB for him. I thought he was missing. I called his mom. Seems everything is fine, and I was overreacting. But, yeah, he's coming back, and, you know, we missed him. We're glad he's back.
Yeah, the Georges are a well-traveled bunch. I will give them that. I mean, out there in Ireland, sending us pictures of Star Wars sites.
And yeah,
that was really cool. And some a little bit of Game of Thrones action, which I didn't realize how heavily CGI'd that town was.
Well, it has to be. I mean, you know, the thing is, I don't think there's anywhere in the world that actually looks like the Red Keep. You know, and especially when you see it from like outside the city and you see the coastline coming up to it, you know, you got to make it look like it's a kingdom, like it's the seat of a kingdom in that era. And, you know, they do a really good job with it. The CGI, I mean, they surprise me time and time again. You know, the amount of detail that Game of Thrones and HBO does with that stuff, it's always amazing.
And they're just ramping it up. I mean, I think they said something like the Battle of the Bastards took, what, like 12 or 13 days to shoot, and the final battle in the series took somewhere around a month. So we're really in for it as fans. I mean, I absolutely cannot wait for Game of Thrones to come back. Egg?
They don't pull any punches there either. It's crazy.
Our guest tonight is one of the most inspiring stories I've come across on social media, going from almost couch potato to one of the most exciting up-and-coming independent wrestlers today, the Stubborn Angel herself, Miss Shawna Reed, joins the program. Shawna, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So, Shawna, it's been a pretty incredible ride for you, and we've got some questions about how this has gone. I mean, it's a pretty inspiring story. I mean, what drove you from the gym and then to the ring?
I've always been a wrestling fan when I was little, and then I got, like, I kind of went out of it, then got, like, you know, severely bullied and things like that in school, and always had wrestling in my, you know, my heart. But then I started, like, going through, you know, depression and anxiety and things like that, and became, like you said, a little couch potato and, you know, an introvert, didn't really talk to anybody or do anything, and then got back into wrestling as a fan, and then knew I always wanted to do it when I was younger. So I decided, why not give it a shot? And pretty much that's how it got back into the ring.
That's fantastic.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. How long did you have to train before you had your first match in front of people? And tell us about your first match.
Well, I started training in September of 2015, and I ended up getting hurt and like about a month into my training, so I had to sit out for a little bit, but I still went to every single practice and took notes, and that just made me want to get back in the ring more. And I restarted back up in March that next year, and ended up, no joke, not even, no, I'm sorry, I started back up in February that next year, and then 3 weeks back into my training, I got a text message from my trainer saying, do you want to wrestle tomorrow? And I messaged him back like, you mean on a show in front of people? And he said, yeah. And I immediately, you know, said no, declined it. I'm not ready. But he kind of talked me into it, used the phrase, if you don't trust yourself, trust me. So kind of couldn't say no to that. And ended up being for Bobby Fulton. And my first show ended up being also in front of over 1,000 people with someone I used to look up to when I was little, Road Warrior Animal, being on the show. So it was pretty intimidating.
Those are some big names in wrestling. So your first time out, that has to be a little intimidating. Hold on just 1 second, Shauna. We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Cynic Radio Podcast. How you guys doing? This is Tom and Jay Eat.
What's going on?
I was just calling to say how fantastic your podcast is, and I was wondering, what are your thoughts on Tom Clancy's The Division 2 coming soon?
Well, The Division 2 looks like it's going to be an excellent game. It looks like they went back and they fixed some of the problems in the past, and it looks like it could be something that I might be interested in playing long term. I'm definitely going to follow it. Egg, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that completely. It looks like the playable area is going to be almost set exactly to scale the way it should be. Looks like it's going to be about 3 times the size. And it looks like they've done a lot of balancing and made it more fun where you're not getting just beat up just so easily. Like, you actually have a chance. It looks fun. It looks like it'll be a good game. And really, I can't wait for it.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem. I agree.
All right, Shauna. You are part of a stable called the Five Most Wanted. Tell us about the group and who else is in it.
Well, we're just, it's a group of guys. I'm the only girl that pretty much are kind of legends in wrestling. Sean Casey, Cody Hawk. We have our manager, David J. Goetz. And then we also have Big John Murray, who's also seen on Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. So it's pretty much just a group that likes to go out and have fun and, you know, do what we do in the ring and look good doing it.
Well, stables are important, from the Bullet Club all the way to the NWO. I mean, they can either make or break it, and they can kick your career or make it just fall, kick your career into the stratosphere or just make you fall flat on your face. Would you agree?
Yes, definitely.
So if you were to have a dream opponent, like from the past or somebody wrestling now, who would your dream opponent be?
Either AJ Lee or Trish Stratus.
They're both fantastic workers.
Yeah.
Who were some of your wrestling heroes growing up, both men and women?
Shawn Michaels, Trish Stratus, The Undertaker, kind of controversial, but definitely Chris Benoit. He was the one who really even got me first into professional wrestling. Mickey James. So I kind of like gravitated towards like the darker, kind of scarier characters. Like, my first two favorites were Undertaker and Kane. I was all about them. And then it kind of, you know, gravitated into Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels is still my favorite to this day.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a wrestling mark myself, and I always liked the darker characters like Undertaker or Kane or even Raven or Vampiro.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up watching
Raven
them.
A few months ago. That was
How's
awesome.
He doing?
He's good. It was really cool.
Yeah, I like those darker characters too. They're just more interesting, you know. The heel is always just, they can have a whole lot more fun. So you said you're the only girl in the group of five. So was it harder to break into the business as a woman?
Oh, God, yeah. Our business is very, you know, male dominated. So and a lot of people don't like female wrestling, which is now making a break. Like, it's finally getting its break that was long deserved, should have been, you know, a long time ago. But first you got to, you know, prove to the people, other wrestlers, the guys in your training class that you want to be here just as much as them, and you're going to work your butt off, if not, like, as much as them or harder than them. And then, you know, getting yourself booked, you have to, unfortunately, like, it's also not just based on skill, but it's based on your looks. So you have to have the look. So it was definitely a life-changing yet stressful, you know, situation that it put me in, but it really helped my confidence and really changed who I was.
Now yeah, that you're in this, do you think maybe that that Netflix show Glow had anything to do with the resurgence of maybe women becoming more popular? I mean, I kind of enjoyed that show. It was kind of fun.
Oh, I really liked that show, but I think the women's revolution happened before that show, you know. It should have, the Glow Girls should have, I think, been acknowledged earlier before all that. But I think, like, the reason maybe Glow got, like, the Netflix series started was because women were actually making an impact in wrestling, and people saw that it was actually becoming something that people got interested in. I, at first, wouldn't watch Glow because I know a few of the original Glow Girls, and I didn't want to, like, you know, be biased. And then a few people told me to finally watch it, and I finally sat down and watched it, and I was blown away by it and loved it.
Have you taken a look at season two yet, or are you still on season one like I am?
No, I finished season one a long time ago, but I thought season two came out on the 29th, so I haven't seen it yet.
You could possibly be right. I was wrong on Luke Cage a couple days ago, too. I'm telling somebody to go watch it, and they're like, you know, it's not out till like the 22nd, so I was completely wrong on that. I loved Glow, and I loved the representation it did all around. I mean, I grew up watching that show, and I enjoyed a lot of the characters immensely. Maybe some more than I realized for other reasons, but I was a young kid, so I didn't know. But when you work a match, I mean, Glow had a great representation of faces and heels. Would you rather have the crowd boo you, or would you rather have the crowd cheer you?
Well, I mean, it depends. I'm a heel pretty much everywhere I go, except for a few select shows, because I'm a 5'10" tall girl, and most wrestlers are shorter than me. So sometimes I'm kind of the intimidating, you know, body in the ring. It's always nice to be cheered because, you know, it sells more merch, but it's more fun to be heel and get people mad at you. Cause it's, I don't know, just pulling that reaction out of people, really gets me going.
Well, I mean, you have the NWO and Stone Cold Steve Austin to thank for that, right? I mean, being the bad, and The Rock, really, being the bad guy became cool, you know, in the late 90s. Before, I'm sure that it was hard to sell shirts as a heel, but then when they made it cool to be a bad guy, it, you know, their stuff took off. The crowd started cheering them even when they didn't want to.
Yeah, you definitely have your crowd that is very heel-based, and you definitely have your very baby-face crowd, and you definitely have that mixture in between. So it's pretty just depends on the crowd, which ones they cheer for, which ones they boo for.
Yeah, that's got to be a good time to try and play that crowd, especially when you find one that's, you know, pro you, whatever side you're playing. So as most wrestlers, I'm sure you have some type of finishing move. What kind of describe your finishing move? And is it a lights-out move, or is anyone kicked out of it?
I'm kind of going through a transition right now. My first finishing move was a big boot to the face because I have such long legs. But I've started kind of getting my confidence up with doing kind of like a it's called a kryptonite crunch, which is also called, I guess Sheamus uses it as like a white noise. And where I'll put somebody over my shoulder and act like they're like a sack of potatoes and then flip them backwards and then fall back myself. And then I'm also kind of just now starting my own different version of a Famouser. So I'm kind of like transitioning right now, but my current one is a kryptonite crunch, and I've had one person kick out of it.
Ooh, that's pretty good odds.
Yeah. I mean, out of all your matches so far, if only one person's kicked out of it, I would say that you're doing it pretty well and pretty timed. I mean, timing is everything with the finishing move, right? It's not just you've got to wait till they're worn down a certain way. You've got to wait till it's a certain point in the match, and then hopefully you can put their lights out with it. Now, that one person that kicked out on you, did you end up getting the win or did you lose that time?
No, I kind of got a little, you know, carried away. It was a tournament match with me and this guy named Ryan Michaels. And we went out there and had a pretty awesome match. And we, you know, I pulled out everything I had and even did my first ever superplex off, you know, off the top. And I, you know, kind of got mad that he even kicked out of that after my finishing. So I went and got, he brings out a sledgehammer. So I pulled a little Triple H and, you know, tried to use that. And the ref took it away from me. I turned around and Ryan ended up getting the pin on me without me being able to kick out.
Oh,
now is
that's got to be just rough.
Yeah, is the intensity turned up when it's like a mixed tag or you're actually facing a male?
It is. I mean, it's definitely harder. I, being one of the only females really in my area, I wrestle mainly males. And, you know, so I'm kind of – I've been trained to be as tough as the guys. And, you know, I'm the only girl in my training class. And so I've been trained for it. It's definitely more nerve-wracking going out there because people automatically, you know, a guy and a girl who's going to win. So I like changing their minds and proving people wrong.
Yeah, well, if there's any way that feminism is going to work for me, that's the way, you know, getting women to beat guys' asses in a wrestling ring. That works.
As a wrestler, you're like a rock band slash superhero, and you get to travel all over the place and take your skills and your show everywhere. It even took you as far as England. How was that? What was that like going overseas to wrestle, and how did the match go?
Well, first of all, it was freezing. England in December, very cold. It was, you know, amazing. I got to, it's always been a dream of mine just to wrestle out of the country. So getting to do that within my first 2 years of my career was amazing. And, you know, the match, I was in a triple threat match with one of those girls. And then another girl who's been on Lucha Underground, and she was from Canada. So it was pretty fun. Like, the crowd was very different in England from here, but it was definitely a great experience, and I'll be going back soon. So,
and do you have
so
another
they want
match
you
booked
back
over there?
Yeah, I was scheduled for in September, but I had to cancel it due to some like reasons at home. But they wanted me. They said if I can't come back in September, then they want me back either in May or the summer of next year. So.
That is awesome. That's great stuff. I mean, so you must be doing pretty well. You're moving up in the ranks. So that being said, what are your goals for your career? Is there any time we're going to be seeing you in the WWE or TNA in the years to come?
Well, I've done some extra talent work for WWE. I've actually done it about 6 times last year. And so I've got to do a few little, like, dark matches and then had a few little spots in there, little skits that they do. So, yeah, my 3 goals when I joined professional wrestling was wrestle in a WWE ring, wrestle out of the country, and make an impact on women's wrestling. And I got to do the first 2 in my first 2 years of my career. So I'm working on that 3rd one, and I've got quite a while to work on that.
Well, it kind of happens without you really knowing either. Like, you know, the right people see you or the right video gets on the internet, and the next thing you know, you're standing on Raw or SmackDown, right?
Correct. Yeah, definitely.
So it's just a matter of the big break. Now, just a side question. I'd seen that you'd had some interactions with younger fans. Have all of your interactions with fans been positive, or have you gotten a little bit of guff for being a heel?
When I'm a heel, I kind of overdo it. And actually, if about a month ago in Kentucky, Franklin, Kentucky, I actually had to get escorted out of the building because I had about 30 to 50 fans waiting outside the building to beat me up and even blocked in my car. So,
what exactly did you do to elicit that type of reaction?
Well, well, I chased the baby face out of the ring because I was mad. And as I was going, a older lady swung at me. She didn't hit me, but she swung. And you know how some of those fans can get. So I saw that she had a plate of nachos, and I just maybe sort of flipped it, and it went all over her.
So do you have to pay for their nachos when you do that?
No.
Did you get any nacho cheese on your fingers and you could at least have a snack on your way out? I mean, that's got to be a blast sometimes to do. When some people like, I mean, they know they're there for entertainment and they're going to watch mm-hmm. something. And when they take it that seriously, I mean, doesn't that kind of bother you a little bit? I mean, you want them to take it somewhat seriously because then they're going to get involved and have more fun. But when they get to that level where they're going to attempt to maybe hurt you, which could hurt your career, isn't that a little bit more problematic?
Yeah, and that was, like, really my first time ever getting a reaction like that. So at first, when I got in the back, I was, like, scared that I was going to get, like, you know, yelled at and all that. But it actually was a completely different reaction in the back. And basically, we had to wait an hour for the people to leave. And people were still waiting in their cars to see if I would come out. So.
I saw that one.
So I guess my other question. My other question
hold on. Yeah, I saw that one. I was at MSG, and the main event was The Rock versus Triple H. And for whatever reason, Stephanie was coming out with The Rock, and Triple H was already in the ring. And some guy jumped down from the stands and pushed Stephanie. And that guy got a beating from both The Rock and Triple H within an inch of his life. It was one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen. I mean, people need to realize that you guys are working. And to come at you in an aggressive way, regardless of what the theater of the mind is as far as the wrestling match, you know, you're going to get hurt either by security or by wrestlers or by other fans. It's just not a great idea to get involved in that type of thing.
No, if I can pull that kind of reaction out of you, I've done my job.
Exactly. If you're getting booed, you're golden. You're absolutely golden. What were we going to ask at you?
Yeah, so one of the things that's always interested me are the outfits that wrestlers wear, right? They're intricate, they're ornate, they're beautiful, they're just neat to see. But where does one acquire said things, especially the boots? I don't know. I've always had a thing that they somehow look like really cool and really comfortable at the same time.
My first three pairs of wrestling gear were made by two different people. And then recently I've kind of just changed up my gear a little bit, and I got one from like an actual like rave place online. And then I also cut up a shirt for my other one. And, you know, Spencer's is always a good place to look for that too. And, you know, I just kind of made my own gear this past time. And then boots wise, you can just type in wrestling boots online and you can find them.
Yeah, you seem to be able to get anything online anymore. All you got to do is type it in and it's in your house like 2 or 3 days later. It's simply
exactly.
Odd. So one of your partners in crime and also your partner in life, he's also a wrestler. How is Cody's career going? And are either one of you within the title hunt?
His career is going pretty good. I mean, it's always been really good. He just got a opportunity to be a guest trainer at WWE Performance Center back in February. So it's definitely on the rise.
That's fantastic. That's quite the rub there. Did he enjoy the experience working for them?
Oh God. Yeah.
On top of being
getting to work with the best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's right now. That's the gold standard in wrestling. If you're looking at as far as eyes on the product, I mean, if you look all over the world, though, I mean, there's Ring of Honor and New Japan, and there's a bunch of other federations that are just as good, but not as well known as the WWE. But on top of being a great follow, Shauna, on social media, you've also had a new amazing T-shirt, and it looks like you have some merch coming out. Where can our listeners find that T-shirt and you online?
You can find me on Facebook. You just, you know, type in my name, send me a friend request, or direct message me regarding the shirt. I'll take PayPal and all that. And then I'll mail it to them. or, you know, come see me at a show, and then you can get all my merch and all that stuff there.
That was fantastic. Thank you for calling in, Shauna. We will keep eyes on your career, and if you ever have a big match coming up, feel free to call and promote it with us, and, you know, have Cody or the rest of the Five Most Wanted call in anytime they want.
Perfect. Sounds great. Thank you.
IG, she was just fantastic, and I really appreciate when people take time just to kind of come out and have a conversation with us like that.
What a great personality. You know, I mean, there's been a big resurgence in pro wrestling lately, and it's been mostly for the better. I mean, they're still holding on to a lot of the old people that, quite frankly, can't hang anymore, but they're starting to embrace the newer generation of wrestlers. So I think there could be a very good chance we see people like Shauna, the Stubborn Angel herself, coming onto WWE or TNA sometime soon. And it's just exciting when you get new blood that is just passionate about the sport.
Oh, absolutely. And I've watched some of her matches via YouTube and on her Instagram, and she really can perform. I mean, she is an up-and-coming performer. She's fast, she's agile, and it does have a size advantage on most of her opponents.
So why don't we talk about a little bit of news?
Well, actually, I was going to tell you, just recently, IG, I went to a concert, and was a pretty good one. It was down near Philly, and there was a bunch of bands. And I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here, and please, everybody, just bear with me because I'm going somewhere with this. Every band came out, and they absolutely killed it. I mean, the group called Churches, which is rather unknown. I mean, it's a lot of unknown groups. Portugal, the band, being probably the biggest of them all. And they came out, and they performed a really, really good set. Opened up with Beavis and Butthead mocking their own video, which I absolutely loved. But the headliner was 30 Seconds to Mars. Now, 30 Seconds to Mars plays a lot of radio-friendly rock. I'm sure you've heard of them, right?
Yeah, of course I've heard of 30 Seconds to Mars. They're a pretty big band.
Now, I know I'm going a little long here, so I hope I didn't put you to sleep. But they play a lot of radio rock. And their lead singer is Jared Leto, the superstar that was just Joker in the Suicide Squad and a bunch of other stuff. I believe either won or was up for an Academy Award in Dallas Buyers Club. He's a good actor. I mean, Fight Club, you could go on all day naming his credentials. But his band, maybe not so much. And I was a little apprehensive about going to see them. I went, they came out. First off, the first thing I noticed was there was an extension to the stage. And no other band would use it. So about the third or fourth band, somebody finally made a comment about it. Like, hey, sorry guys, I would use this, but I'm not allowed. Which absolutely drove me crazy, because that means that was put there specifically for 30 Seconds from Mars, and I understand that they're the headliner, but come on, is another smaller band going to outshine you because they're closer to the crowd or coming out and showboating out on this little extension of the stage? And then they came out and they played about four songs into their set, and it's all, I was just confused by the whole thing. But the kicker of it all is they gave certain fans, which all seemed to be towards the front, these flags, and they did nothing but wave them. And I was in the second row, mind you, and I could not see the show. That absolutely drove me crazy. I mean, is it really worth it to impede the view of everybody else around you so you get a little bit of a few inches on your dick because people have flags in your crowd? I mean, I just don't understand it. I don't understand why they would do it. I would not advise anybody listening to go see them. And, I ended up leaving about, I'd say, five or six songs into their set, but you would never know because all the songs are all crowd participation. Like, he would start, and I don't mind people going to the crowd, but when it's so interactive that I feel like we're playing Simon Says, it drives me absolutely crazy. Have you ever been to a show like that?
I don't see what the point in doing that to the crowd is. Like, I didn't pay. And normally I pay pretty good money because I want to have a good place to be in the concert. So I'm talking $100 a ticket, typically around that range. And I didn't pay that money so I could sing the song. I want to listen to you sing the song, man. I want to see you put on the show. You know, I've been to some that have been great. You know, you and I both went to Rob Zombie. Great concert, little bit of crowd participation, mostly Rob and his band doing their thing. And I loved it. But then I've been to some other ones where they're like, everybody stand up, everybody wave left. You know, come on. I don't need sit, stand, kneel like I'm going to church here. This is just entertain. You know, we'll get up and we'll sing and we'll clap and we'll raise our hands if you're putting on a good show. But handing out flags? My goodness, you just trying to punish everybody that didn't get there first? Because, you know, people are pushing their way to those seats, right? I'm sure that wasn't like they just bought their tickets the first day early and got the front row seats. They got there early and that's how they got there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you pay for a ticket and you expect to be – and you pay for a ticket close and you expect to be able to see. Another thing I found funny about the whole show was for whatever reason, their longtime guitarist left the band. And when they come on, it's just him and the drummer. And I was a little confused. I'm like, are they playing pre-taped guitar tracks? And it turned out they weren't. They had some poor guy that they stuck off in the corner of the stage in dark clothing, in the shadows, playing guitar. And I just didn't understand – why they did that to that guy. I mean, at least I'm sure he's being well paid to be there. I'm sure he's doing that, but let him have a little stage time. Let him interact with the fans. I mean, maybe he doesn't win the search and become the new guitarist permanently, but what would be the harm in having that guy out front with you, even if he's not a permanent member of the band?
Yeah. I mean, that's not the first time that's ever happened in a band either, where you get somebody that's either just filling in for a part of the tour or you other person left and you got a new band member. It's happened. I mean, Van Halen's been through how many different people on their band? They're still going fine. It's not a problem. You know, the only thing that I could see that would be reasonable if it's like Slash and he doesn't want to be known with these people, so he's standing in the shadows so that people don't associate him with 30 Seconds to Mars. If it's something like that, I got you. I understand. But if it's the band themselves saying, we don't want to put you out front with us because, you know, people expect Joe Blow, the regular guitarist, and he's not there. You know, you got to think about this a different way, people. You got to embrace what you got. And, you know, I liked the band. They've had a couple of good songs. Jared Leto was great in Dallas Buyers Club, but I hated him as the Joker in Suicide Squad. So, I don't know. I'm kind of on the downfall for Mr. Leto himself, but that's okay. I mean, you know, if that's the kind of thing they want to do, then the band isn't long for this world.
Well, on top of all that, he came out dressed like Macho Man Randy Savage, which ties into the whole Shona interview, and he did nothing but raise his arms and spin around like Macho Man. I wasn't quite sure what he was aiming for there. I mean, it was a cool robe and cool presentation when it was done in the 90s during the King of the Ring, but I'm paying good money. You're the headliner. I want a little bit more than me doing all the work and you standing there and just kind of posing. I don't know. Listen, if it comes down to it and you like the band, you like the band. Music is very subjective. But if you have a choice of 30 Seconds to Mars or anybody else, I would choose just about anybody else at this point. All right, IG,
anybody
let's do some
else.
News.
That's pretty big. All right, let's do some news. All right, so we got a few things we want to talk about. Some of them are going to be a little bit older, but we haven't had a chance to talk about them yet. So I want to hit this. The first one, there was an essay released by actor Chloe Dykstra, the former ex of Chris Hardwick from The Talking Dead at Midnight. He started the Nerdist website and everything, describing an emotionally abusive relationship who she said she supported as he went through a mildly successful podcaster to a powerhouse CEO of his own company. She didn't mention him by name in her piece, but everybody knows it's got to be Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, this is unfortunate. And I don't like to cast aspersions. I never like to say anybody's lying because what if they're not? You know, that's like whenever somebody's sick at work and everybody's like, oh, he's not sick, he's doing this. I don't know whether he's sick or not, and I don't know if Chris Hardwick did these things or not. I know that the timing of this issue is very, very troubling to me. You wait till his career is at a fever pitch, and then you bring up things from years and years and years ago. It worries me a little bit, IG. Did the timing seem suspect to you?
Yeah, and it really did. And, you know, it's a thing that's been happening quite a bit recently where everybody has to have some kind of story about somebody big. And, like, everybody's saying this stuff happened 10 plus years ago. Everybody's saying, but he did these horrible things. I don't have any proof, although Chloe says she has both texts from him that explain it and video evidence that she just refuses to release, which, I mean, if you really have the evidence, then let's get it out. Let's show us that you're not lying. But I don't know. It just seems like people are jumping on a very important movement. The Me Too movement, I think, is very important because there have been a lot of people that have had to sacrifice things or been put in awkward situations by people of power, especially in Hollywood. And to jump on that bandwagon in the way that she did, it seems convenient. And I don't know. I guess there were some texts released from Chris himself saying that kind of refuted that completely, showing the things that she said shortly after they broke up. It just doesn't look like the way that somebody was so abusive and so rude and mean and everything else that's the kind of response you would get. So I'm still kind of torn on what could be true and what's not, but it seems like on this one more than others, I'm more torn toward Chris probably didn't do anything. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a woman scorned is, we all know that, you know, it's a problem. And maybe she's just finding a way that maybe she can try and rub him for some money, or maybe she tried and he said no, and this was her revenge tactic.
Well, Ryan George has now joined us, so I'm going to go ahead and boot him in.
Hey,
Ryan, any feelings? Hey, man, any feelings on the whole Chris Hardwick situation?
I mean, it's as usual. It's a tough situation to judge because it seems like it's very much a he said, she said. You know, I do think that, you know, I don't think that anything that's happened since, whether it be the text messages or anything, kind of proves one way or another that she, you know, is in it for the money or is making things up. You know, I think that it's still fairly consistent with somebody who's been in an abusive, you know, controlling relationship. And so it's really hard to judge if you're kind of on the outside of those situations. I think that, you know, unfortunately, we knew that with the Me Too movement, there would be, you know, there are going to be some casualties. There would be some situations where somebody, you know, we're at the point where I feel like we have to give women the benefit of the doubt in these situations. You know, obviously, you want due process. We don't want to, you know, ruin someone's career over, you know, accusations if it's just that. But I think we should give the benefit of the doubt, and we should, you know, I want to believe, you know, I like Chris Hardwick, so I don't want to believe he's capable of that. But, you know, I also don't want to dismiss it outright. So it's just a tough situation. I hope the truth comes out at some point. But, you know, I don't think anything that's happened one way or another, you know, clearly says, you know, he must have done it or he didn't. I would say that the silence in the community is interesting, and I wonder, you know, partly is the silence because, you know, he really is an asshole and his friends are, you're not going to stick up for him, or is the silence because people maybe want to stick up for him, but they're like, yeah, I'm not messing up my career to stick up for him. So I also find it kind of a little bit interesting that there has been kind of silence, mostly from, you know, from community, his friends outside of his, you know, wife and his mother-in-law. It seems like there's been relative silence regarding it.
And you would hope that his wife and his mother-in-law would come out in his defense.
Yeah.
What, are you turning into some kind of feminist?
Actually, no. I'm not. Because I'm not turning into a feminist. I consider myself a feminist. And the claims in this accusation were vague, and they were masked, and they were years old, and they would be hard to prove other than what proof she says she has that she won't release, which I'm calling complete bluff there. But what it sounds to me like they had is an extremely dysfunctional relationship. And I don't know if that exactly falls under the category of our business. If he didn't sexually assault her or physically assault her and there was no crime committed and law enforcement wasn't called, I mean, over a long period of time, a lot of dysfunctional relationships go this way. You know, the pressuring for sex, the everything that she named in the complaint just sounds like that they weren't right for each other. They were two dysfunctional people at the time, and they didn't belong together. I hope the accusations aren't true, but if they are, I hope Chris sought help. I mean, I don't care who you are. You guys are two of the nicest guys I know, but we could go to any of your exes and spin 10% of the truth, and they could say some really brutal shit about you, but should you lose your job? Should you lose your gig over an accusation of a past relationship?
No. And, you know, and that's the thing, is it's all accusation unless, like you said, at the time somebody was called. Like if there was some type of intervention started or anything, and there's an actual official record, then yeah, and I'm trying to hide it or mask it, then sure, you know, come and, you know, come down with pitchforks and fire and do it up. But, you know, we all know what the laws are. We all know what is okay and what isn't okay. And I mean, even if I tried to do something to my wife that isn't okay, she knows she can call the police anytime. And
yes.
I'm surprised she hasn't yet.
Well, I think it also brings up an interesting questions. And I guess we're living through whatever these changes are, because, you know, what is appropriate in a relationship, and what about that then extends itself to like your public life? So, you know, if you're in a relationship and you argue and you yell at each other, like that shouldn't affect your job situation. If you're, you know, if you're kind of controlling, like, you know, should that affect your job? If you're, you know, then if that level of control extends, like where are the limitation?
Hold up, Brian. We went off air. Oh. I don't know why.
I'm still showing on the air.
I've got.
It says on air.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it brings up an interesting situation, because you want to, you know, what are the lines for a relationship, and what should be public and what shouldn't be public, and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And even if you're looking at the accusations and the article, you know, it paints a picture of a pretty shitty person and a pretty controlling person. But whose business is that? And I don't know what the answer really is to that. Like, what should we know? We kind of go back to, like, even, you know, the Aziz Ansari situation, where it was like clearly, you know, it seemed more like just a bad date. But, you know, he got raked over coals for that a little bit. And I think for the most part, it seems like he, you know, he's not going to lose his career. But that was, a rough stretch. You know, and so I guess we're kind of figuring out now, like, where are those limitations, and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate when it comes to how someone is in a relationship.
Well, and you said it exactly. And, you know, the difference is people that are more in public vision than we are, right? So, you know, things that we do because we're not so much in public vision don't get put on a blog where we get talked about endlessly all over the world. You know, these people can do the exact same thing you or I do, and all of a sudden somebody's like, oh my God, he ate chicken chow mein. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
It can be just the most minute detail. I mean, it's like they're not allowed to have a bad day, a bad date, not get along with somebody, because someone's going to just beat them up on social media everywhere they go. It's unfortunate and it's terrible, and I don't know when people are going to realize the amount of decorum that you have to hold for somebody just not being right or being compatible with another person. Because
yeah.
That's really all it is. If you're not, some people are in relationships for years and then figure out finally that they're not compatible. And that's what it seems like with Chloe and Chris. This was, is that, yeah, they had a years long relationship, but they just didn't find out early enough because maybe they just liked other things about each other so much that they didn't realize that their relationship was toxic. Well,
yeah,
Chris took the high road.
Terrible.
Didn't
I'm sorry.
Say anything. Chris took the high road and didn't say anything, but Chloe decided years later that she's going to go out and hit him with a hammer.
I agree, IG. I mean, it's troublesome to say the least. I really hope that they get it worked out.
So my next story comes from here in Minnesota. A woman was at a music festival and had a memorable time. She got her head stuck in a truck's exhaust pipe for 45 minutes. Caitlin Strom was at the Winstock Music Festival in the town of Winsted on Friday, 2 weeks ago, where few people have gone before, and that's up the back of a tailpipe. She spent about 45 minutes inside the pipe and was rescued when firefighters came and used a power saw. Surprisingly enough, the McLeod County Sheriff's Office then cited her for underage drinking.
I don't know how this is physically possible. I don't know how she possibly did this. How small is she? I mean, does she have a pinhead? I would have to see a visual of this to believe it.
I saw the visual of it. It was one of them big, big muffler things that, you know, rednecks like to put on their trucks, make it look like they have a huge exhaust. But, yep, her head was right inside of it. It was pretty funny.
Yeah,
all right, IG. why don't we get to some Incredibles before we run out of time, and we'll get back to news.
All right, Brian, sounds great.
The second movie started much like the first, with the Incredibles being a lot like the Rodney Danger of superheroes. They get no respect, and the more they try to help the city, the more the whole thing just turns against them, being sued, threatened with jail. I mean, the movie brought in over $600 million the first time around. And after its second week now, the second movie has brought in over $400 million. But after 14 years, was Incredibles 2 a necessary movie?
In this world of, you know, where superhero movies rule, considering that the first Incredibles was among the best superhero movies ever made, I would say, yeah, I don't know if any of this is necessary, but it's certainly a movie that, given the right amount of time and care, you know, I would have loved to have seen a sequel, because it was a great movie. And there were so many places you could go with it that I definitely think, of all the, you know, superhero movies we've gotten over the past two decades, this is certainly one that could use a sequel.
IGD, think,
yeah,
it was as good as the first?
Well, here, that's the rub, isn't it? There have been a few times, because this is a Disney movie, but it's also a Pixar movie. There's been a few times where Pixar goes back to the well and does really well. I mean, look at all the Toy Story movies. They get progressively better as you go along. But then you look at some other things, like the Monsters, Inc. movies, Monsters University, not as good as the first one. The Cars movies, typically not as good as the first one. So, you know, that's where you run into a problem, because it's really hard to recreate that magic with some of these properties. I don't know if it's quite as good, but it's pretty close. I did enjoy it, and I think it's pretty close to the first Incredibles.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I would have to agree. I think it builds, you know, it's hard to say. It's always hard to compare like a sequel to an original, but I really think it builds on what was the strength of the first. And I think if there was anything lacking, maybe it was just that, you know, not quite as compelling of a villain. But I think when, you know, it just gets the family dynamic so well, I think it does some, you know, the visuals are light years ahead of the first, which itself had great visuals. And I just think it gets so many things right about, you know, superheroes and the action scenes and the family dynamic. I think it does so many things well that I definitely put it up there, you know, equal to, if not better than, the first.
Well, that brings up some great questions as too as well, Ryan. Like, the beginning of the movie is just a botched bank robbery that, you know, destroys half the town. And I mean, would superheroes be more destructive for what they're worth, or do you think that if we could have them in reality, would it help or hurt more as far as property destruction, lost lives? I mean, sometimes is it just better to let the bad guys win?
Yeah, it does bring up a great question. I would say no. I think there needs to be – you need to counter that. There's, you know, at some point the bad guys do bad enough things that, you know, no amount of insurance or infrastructure is going to protect it. So I think, you know, if you have a world with supervillains and you have heroes that are capable of stopping them, I think you need – to equip yourself with them to stop them. I don't buy into that. You know, the kind of idea that let's just sit back and we'll let insurance pay for it. I don't think it would work, because the villains would just escalate as far as they possibly could, until, you know, they're literally, you know, taking over the world, which seems to be their objective all the time.
What do you think, IG?
Well, what better objective is there than taking over the world? That's the right one to have, isn't it? I mean, and the only one keeping us safe from all this, ladies and gentlemen, is Ryan George. He's got his underwear on the outside, and, you know, he was just overseas, and that's because he was fighting crime. So, he's got to go when he's got to go. So he's not always here, and that's why. And now you know. I don't know what his superhero name is, though, but if you see somebody that's under 5'7", that's probably him.
just barely under 5'7".
Uh-huh, 5'6" and a half. The half is important.
Need that half.
Yeah, when you start telling the half sizes, you know that you're a little too short. I think his name would be Nice Guy Ryan, and his superpower would be just showing people random spots around the city. Like, he would just tour guide for free. Like, he would find lost tourists all over New York City and just lead them, as long as you're willing to crosswalk with him. Because my man Ryan will crosswalk like a motherfucker. I mean, you better be, if you're with him, you better be on your A game and moving, because he's going to run across right in front of a bus. And, it's like playing a game of Frogger hanging out with Ryan George. IG, the family sports a variety of superpowers, including super strength, speed, stretching. I mean, the baby had everything. But if you had an opportunity to have a superpower other than podcast, what would it be?
Ooh, you know what? There's so many options to choose from. I mean, you could choose flight. You could choose super strength, super intelligence. A lot of things might be great. Teleportation would be awesome. I don't know. Probably invisibility, so I could just go wherever I wanted to go. Just like if I want to go see a concert, I just walk in because you can't see me go there. You know, anything I want to go to, I can just be at. That might be a good one. So I think invisibility.
How about you, Ryan?
I feel like we went over this question at some point. Probably time travel. I think I answered that before too, but I think time travel would be my superpower if I could have one.
Ooh, he wants to be Cable. You're too short, Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So is Josh Brolin, but that didn't stop him from CGIing an electronic arm on his body. That there's so many good ones. Not to geek it up too much, I would like super speed or invisibility. I think those would be my favorite.
Yeah.
Speed has its advantages. You don't ever have an excuse to be late anymore.
Ryan, you're the closest thing we know to a superhero, but if being a superhero was illegal, could you just sit by on your hands while crime was out of control and not do anything out of fear of being prosecuted or possibly sued?
If I had superpowers, if I had the powers and the ability to stop it, no, I wouldn't do it out of fear of being prosecuted. The end of the day, worst case is you go to jail. But if I have those powers, it's not like people are going to mess with me. So no, I would have to use the powers if I saw it as me being the difference between protecting people's lives and them just kind of being a statistic. I would definitely jump in.
How about you, Edgy? Do you think that you could justify
what was that Will Smith movie where he was a superhero?
I like that movie too. I don't know what to do all that.
Hancock, right? Like, they put him in jail. He put one guy's head up the other guy's ass, and he jumped out of the jail to get the basketball back and jumped back in. So, I mean, if you've got the superpowers, they could put you in there. But what can they do to you? Nothing really. So, pretty soon, if you're in a world where you're a superhero, and even if you weren't a great superhero, but you were like saving people, eventually they're going to need you back. So even if they prosecute you, they might turn around and go, well, maybe we should let him out because we can't handle this particular bad guy. So yeah, I think I'm not sitting on my hands either.
Well, let's talk a little Elastigirl. I mean, to help her family, she had to leave it. To enforce the law, she had to break it. IG, you were a stay-at-home dad for a good stretch of time. I mean, could you identify with what Mr. Incredible struggle was, especially with a young child at home?
I looked just like him. It was just anything I could do to get them to stop whatever was going on, cookies, ice cream, whatever. And I was tired. I was beat up. I was, children, come on, please. I don't know. And the math joke is truer than anyone would want to believe. Oh my God, my children have come home, tried to show me that, and they're like, well, I don't understand this, Dad. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're showing me either. I can show you how I used to do it, but you're going to get in trouble. So I can't help you. I don't understand that math. Why did they change math? I've said those words. Math is math. Why did they change math?
Well, that was the one promise that the current administration did say that I agreed with completely, was the downfall of Common Core. I mean, I know people are split on that, but math is math. It should never change. Crime fighting has become quite a family affair. But, Ryan, if your wife and your kids had superpowers, would you let them actively fight crime, or would you make them stay home?
I would probably want to make them stay home. I think there's just a natural part of you that would want to protect them, and knowing that it's dangerous, I think it would be really tough for me to allow them to kind of put themselves – in harm's way, you know, realistically. I think it also maybe depends a little bit on what kinds of powers they have. Like, seems like, you know, Elastigirl kind of can't die. Like, so maybe that would inform my decision a little bit. But I would have, and like Jack, I feel like what can you do to him? So maybe I wouldn't mind throwing him in there. But I think depending on the powers, it'd be tough to allow a close family member into the line of fire.
Now you got to think though, his wife, like, they met as superheroes, like, you know, they were already having independent lives as superheroes, and that's how they met. So now, if you had met your wife that way, are you going to tell her now she has to sit at home? I mean, I don't think so. She probably kicked your butt then.
Fair enough. In that case, yeah, you wouldn't. But I think if I had already, you know, if we both were developing the powers at the same time, then I might be a little reluctant.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the wife can come along, and I've met some people I think might have superpowers, and God be it for me to stop them for trying to stop crime, but I think your kids need to stay at home until they're at least of legal age. I mean, the whole passing the baby back and forth during the whole thing, I know it was done to be funny, but a little unrealistic. Get a sitter for the kids. They can fight crime when they can buy cigarettes. One of my favorite parts of the movie, and you and I talked about this off the air, IG, was Jack versus the raccoon. I mean, what was your thoughts on that epic showdown? And was it a little bit of overkill having him have every single power ever known to man just for comedic purposes?
No, I don't think it was. I think it worked. I think it worked beautifully. It was probably my favorite part of the entire movie, and it was just absolutely hilarious because, like, there were some reactions from the raccoon that is like, oh, my God, what now? It was almost human-like reactions, but it was just hilarious to watch. I really enjoyed that, and it kind of gave us all a glimpse of part of what Jack is capable of. And he's way more impressive and powerful than any other superhero we've seen in that universe thus far.
Ryan, what did you think of Screenslaver as the villain and the big reveal of who her identity was?
If there was a weak part of the movie, I feel like it was the villain and her motivation. It seemed kind of a stretch. Like, they were really, you know, and something that at the same time as it being a stretch, something we've kind of seen before, like parents die and you hold a grudge against the hero for whatever reason. I kind of had a feeling it was going to be her early on. And, that proved to be true. I think it was, it wanted us to believe that it was Bob Odenkirk. I forget the name of his character, but, you know, kind of it wanted us to believe that, but I had a feeling it was going to be her. And I wasn't wrong. And I think that was probably the weakest aspect of the movie, but, you know, very loosely kind of say that, because otherwise I thought it was a great movie, you know, outside of that. And so it's kind of a nitpick to say, okay, the villain wasn't great, but I just kind of didn't really buy her motivation and seemed kind of generic superhero supervillain motivation.
Yeah, it was telegraphed a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I really didn't like that portion of the movie, although I did think it was an interesting, intriguing villain up until that point of the reveal. And I was like, they did a little bit of switcheroo with who it might have been. And, but I did like the whole mind control aspect. I did like the goggles. I thought it was it worked very well visually. IG, obviously her motive was revenge for letting her parents die. And she used mind control to control everybody, leaving the kids to save the day. Going into that, the kids versus, you know, X amount of superheroes, did you think they had a chance?
Well, they had Jack, so yes. But without Jack, I think they'd have been hard-pressed. I mean, all right, so Dash is pretty good because he's fast, right? Violet with, you know, it's kind of like, Mrs. Incredible or Invisible Girl or whatever from Fantastic Four. That's kind of her power set. But she seems like she's not properly motivated to do all this stuff, right? So I think that Jack's pure innocence allowed him to be strong enough to do whatever needed to be done there. You know, I mean, and it really kind of did lend itself to that, because it turned into, like, Jack just wanted to see mom and pulled the goggles off, and that started the whole rescue. So, yeah, I mean, I think that building of Jack earlier, kind of that's what helped everything happen. And Edna Mode, like basically discovering how everything works with Jack-Jack, just worked perfectly. So I think it all kind of played out. They explained enough of it to make it work. So yeah, it worked, and I think that's feasible.
Well, I love that aspect of it, that you had, I mean, all of the heroes, you know, minus the kids, were under mind control, and that the fact that they, you know, that it was the kids and that they had to kind of grow up and become heroes was really great. I loved that aspect of it, and that they had to kind of save the day on their own. And you know, I thought it was just, it plays out beautifully, and I really enjoyed that kind of aspect of the movie.
Yeah, it was underdog, and there was a little bit of suspense involved, and obviously, you know, the good guys are going to win the day because it's a Disney movie. But I did like how the kids had to be inventive, and Jack-Jack accidentally, you know, kind of undid the whole plot. So it was very good that way. I mean, in the end, Ryan, the good guys win, peace is restored, the bad guy was defeated, and supers are legal again. What were your thoughts on the movie and your rating?
I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I think the first one was one of the best superhero movies ever made. And like I said earlier, I think this really takes what some of the strengths and really builds on it. You know, I loved, it was a bit subversive with what you'd expect from a movie like this. I loved, it didn't feel long, and I loved the family dynamic. I loved the scenes with them and their powers were really great, because all of the heroes, not just the family, but all the heroes in the movie and villains, use their powers in creative ways. And when they do battle each other, they were actually battling, you know, power for power, instead of, like, you know, some of these kind of super fast cuts, you know, people punching each other in the face stuff we get in a lot of the other, some of the other superhero movies. I think it was really, you know, inventive use of the skills and powers, and really, you know, clever in how they allowed people to kind of fight, you know, the characters to fight each other with what they had at their disposal. So I really enjoyed the action scenes. I thought the story was great. Again, you know, I didn't love the villain, but whatever. I think I thought otherwise the movie had tons of charm. It was really funny. And again, you know, to me, it's the best superhero movie of the year. So I'm going to give it a 9.25.
Wow.
Really, really enjoyed it. Yeah.
That's a good rating.
IG?
I liked it a lot, too. I mean, it looks like a Pixar movie looks, which is generally incredible. I mean, they've nailed animation to a T. I mean, with the exception of the cartoonish looks, this could be a real universe, and I love everything that Pixar does. I'm a Pixar mark, and, you know, generally I can't watch a Pixar movie without at least one tear rolling down my face. This one had a couple feel moments in it too. Feel like a jerk every time I'm watching it, and it's like my kids were out of town with their uncle when this movie came out, so I just went on my own, sat in a movie theater full of kids watching The Incredibles, and that's fine. I don't have any shame. I'll do it again. I like the movie a lot. I think the first one was better. Not going to go quite as high as Ryan. I think an 8.5 from me, but I really did enjoy it. And I firmly believe, like, if you like superhero movies, animated movies, Disney movies at all, any of those categories, you should probably go see this. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, anyone that knows me knows I'm not the biggest fan of these type of movies. But it did bring up some interesting real-world problems and made me think a little bit about the family dynamic with superheroes and the legality of being a superhero and its everyday life. But for the most part, I enjoyed Incredibles. It was entertaining. It was a good time. That's for you, IG. I gave it about a 7.5. I mean, let's hope it doesn't take another 14 years for a sequel. And now I have to go back and watch the first one. IG, do you got any more news before we go?
I got a couple of things. One thing, you called this one, and here it is. Ben Affleck will no longer portray Batman in the character's upcoming solo films, and they're not sure whether or not Affleck appears to be coming as Batman in any supporting appearances for other characters. Still technically possible, but it's seeming unlikely.
Well, we called this from the very beginning. He didn't fit the role. He didn't look the role. He didn't act the role. He didn't want to be in the role. I think it was one of those things that sounded like a very, very good idea to start. And then that first movie bombed, and he started getting those Geely vibes. And if you don't know what Geely is, I suggest you go look it up, because it's a career ender. And then next thing you know, he's got one foot out the door, because he went from wanting to write, direct, produce, be the man in the solo Batman film to maybe I'll just act in it. And right away I knew that was kind of the end for it. I don't want to go too long on this, but offer the role to Ryan George right now. Sign him up for a 10 okay. deal picture. I don't care who the fuck you put in this role, but I'm tired of you switching Batmans every couple films. Get it straightened out. Batman is one of my favorite characters, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of this fooling around, and this is why you'll never catch up to Marvel, and they should just focus on one or two picture arcs and then move on to the next thing. You know, we haven't got a clear-cut Batman movie yet, and now we're switching again. What do you think about it, Ryan?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I'm one of those that was a little bit more on the side of, like, I thought Ben Affleck was fine as Batman. I don't think he was as good as Christian Bale or Kevin Conroy or Michael Keaton, for that matter. But I thought he was fine. I didn't not like him, the character. He looked, you know, looked fine in the cowl and, you know, portrayed the character perfectly fine. But I think there are plenty of other actors out there, whether they're well known or unknown, that can portray the character, depending on what, you know, what storyline you want to pick from or draw from, and what time period of his life you want to work with. So, you know, I'm fine with him not being the character. I think it's the larger issue is DC and just trying to mimic, you know, Marvel, when, you know, there are so many great stories out there. Just tell good stories. Just write good stories, tell good stories. Don't worry about a connected universe. And, you know, get some fresh blood that wants to be in that position. And I hope they're going the right route with, I think it's Matt Ryan, who's directing and writing, you know, whatever's coming up. You know, there's a lot out there, and they can do a good job. You know, at the end of the day, I'd love to see, you know, go a little while without any Batman and just kind of reassess the situation, but it's too valuable of an IP to do that. So we know we're going to get Batman. So I think we just need to have it in the hands of somebody who understands the character, wants to do justice by the character. And yeah, I hope we get, you know, yeah, just get somebody who wants to be in that role, who fits the role physically, and get something good out there. But yeah, I'm glad to see Affleck not there, because I don't think he cared to be in it after, yeah, like you said, after Batman Superman, I think he was checked out. And so I want somebody in there who wants that role.
And of course, Ryan would agree with that, because, you know, quite honestly, you just basically offered him the role. If you had the power, you'd be like, yeah, let Ryan do this. And he's like, yeah, yeah, let Ryan do it. So I've got one more news story. It's the saddest news story I've read in a while. A building collapse at the Barton 1792 distillery in Bardstown sent thousands of barrels of aging liquor crashing to the ground. About 9,000 barrels of aging Kentucky bourbon and whiskey were affected. You know, I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lot of whiskey to be putting away in the wrong way.
Do you think there's time to get down there and maybe soak some up off the ground before it's completely gone? I mean,
just
I would
soak some up in a towel or something.
Yes, I would hate for that to. I'll get a long straw. You know, I'll dig a hole, whatever I need to do to get at some of this free booze. I saw pictures of that, and unlike you crying during The Incredibles, it actually brought a tear to my eye, that visual of all that good quality whiskey on the ground. I felt like that Indian in the Don't Pollute commercials. I just turned around, and I had to put my phone down and go repose myself. So not a good day for whiskey drinkers. What do you think, IG?
Yeah, and not a good D indeed. I love some aged whiskey. It is just one of my favorite things. I have a small oak barrel in my house that, like, I can buy kind of some even cheap whiskey, put it in there for a month or two, and it, like, drastically improves the flavor. So seeing all these beautiful barrels of whiskey just laying all over the place in that picture was just sad. And I'm hoping that they didn't lose too much of the actual whiskey and they're able to pick them back up. I mean, these are like 300-pound barrels apiece. They each hold like 54 gallons or something. It's insane. So I'm hoping they're able to save most of this.
Yeah, I'm not much of a whiskey drinker, so I don't have an opinion on this. Like, I've never loved the taste of whiskey, so won't be running down there to scoop up whatever I can. It can go by the wayside as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, we found his kryptonite.
If it was muscle milk, on the other hand, he'd be right down there. He'd be bench pressing the
milk.
Whole factory.
Badger milk. It's full of badger milk. He'd be all over that.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this show. We want to thank Ryan for showing back up after his long trip. Maybe next week we'll get into what you actually did while you're away. And the stubborn angel herself, Shauna Reed. I hope you enjoyed the show. And until next time.
And that's it for this episode of the Cynic Radio Podcast. I'm Igor Hee. We had a great time bringing you this week's show. Please send all your comments, questions, concerns, and any crazy news stories from your neck of the woods to cynicradio@gmail.com. Find us on the internet at cynicradio.com. Look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio. And find us on Twitter at Cynic Radio. Continue to like, listen, subscribe, and share this with all your friends and family. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at cynicradio.com. Available for download on iTunes.